I am Patrick Martins, host of The Main Course. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome. You have tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. We are coming to you, as always, from the back of Roberta's Pizza here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And we have a full house in the studio today. We're about to tuck into a subject of great interest to me personally. We're going to be exploring the University of Gastronomic Sciences. But before we jump off, I want to give everyone in the room a chance to kind of introduce ourselves, because we have a full house of experts to help take us through the who, what, when, where, and why of the university. So David, I think we'll start with you.
Sure. Well, thank you. Thank you for having us. I'm David Santo. I'm actually a former master's student myself at the university, but I started working right after graduation, doing a bunch of different things, outreach and communications. I've been teaching there for, about 6 or 7 years now, and most recently I've become one of the directors of the master program at the university, and teaching and directing and also learning, of course, because as a teacher you're always still learning.
Always learning.
My name is Ricardo. I've been working for Slow Food and the university since 2005. And in the last few years, I've been in charge of the external relations office. So we establish a partnership and collaboration with companies. Companies are very central for the university because we work with companies. We do activities like didactic activity and research activities for them. So this is my role.
Excellent. Thanks.
Hello, my name is Paolo Ferrarini, and I started to work at the university from the beginning, 2004. I've been the master coordinator for years, and then I moved for the new project that was the canteen of the university, the cookery school, new master project, and so on. So basically my role was to be the didactic manager, that I still don't know what does it mean. And from a few days ago, I started to be the communication director of the university, but just from a few days ago.
So we will tread lightly. We'll give you a soft lead in. David, well, I think for folks who are not familiar with the university, can you kind of set the scene for us? When did the university start, and why, and where exactly is it?
Sure. Well, the university is a project initiated probably around 2000, 2001 as an idea from Carlo Petrini. And in 2004, it actually first opened its doors with the undergraduate program, a 3-year program in gastronomic sciences. Then sequentially, other programs were added, first the two master programs. Initially, there was an Italian language master program and an English language one. But the idea was to start developing a new generation of food thinker doers, let's call them. We call them gastronomes, right? It's someone who has gone through the program and has learned about food, if not from 360 degrees, certainly from 290. And at some point in our history, we've talked about the idea of giving back dignity to the idea of studying food. It was historically not considered worthy of academic attention. And as we've seen all around the world now, there are tons of food programs that are popping up. But in 2004, this was a pretty unusual idea to think about practicing a new way of approaching food study. And so the program is I would say absolutely unique in terms of pedagogical design. We have classroom lectures, so conventional things like social sciences and humanities and food technologies and communication studies, but then also a great deal of what you might call hands-on or experiential or immersive learning. So students do in-class tastings, for example, 32 different cured meats, and trying to learn how to smell and look at and touch and taste food in a very embodied kind of way. But then also we send the students out into the field, and they travel around for 6 or 7 weeks a year to different locations to learn about food in its context of production, to understand the relationships between food production and food heritage and food identity and language and geography. And so that's a very, I think that's a very unusual part of the program, in that it puts us into the space where food is made, but it also puts food into us and in an academic context. And so this very multi-sensory, multi-knowledge-based form of learning is very unusual, even though there are a lot of other programs that are being developed right now. We have this this approach that recognizes that the body is a site of knowledge and not just the mind. And indeed, the mind is part of the body, so why not engage it all at once?
Right. And Ricardo, can you talk? So you work for Slow Food, the organization, and for the university. So how does what you're doing at the university fit in more broadly to the goals as Slow Food has as an organization?
Right. Good question. Yeah. My role at university is seen like being a quite difficult role, yeah? Because we work also with corporate companies. We work with big industrial, organizations, like I would say a few names that you might recognize, maybe Barilla is the pasta maker, mm-hmm. you know that.
Yeah.
Ferrero is the chocolate maker,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And then we got also contacts with big distribution companies, yeah. Mainly are Italian, but we got also some international contacts. One of those is, I believe, the fifth biggest company, and it's called Compass Group, and they do food services. So our idea as a university is to talk to everybody, to have a critical perspective on food issues. And of course, we bring all this Slow Food knowledge within our activities, research activities as well, and didactic activities. And in this way, we believe we can pull companies in order to make them understand that their process could be more sustainable. So we work with them in order to support this type of innovations.
So it's interesting, like you're almost educating in like two different directions.
Well, I think it's educating in all directions if possible, and or as many as we can fit into a year or 2 year long program. And but as Ricky said, to talk about food and food industry with a critical view. So even if we're going to a large scale food manufacturer, Barilla produces a huge amount of pasta daily at a single plant, but it gives a perspective and understanding of what it then means to also make pasta in a very artisanal way or in a small scale way or in a way that recognizes some other kind of tradition than the largest scale markets. So this is what we're trying to produce as a student who's got the capacity to speak the language of industry and the language of artisanality and the language of culture and the language of technology, because that has to be the new reality of dealing with food. You can't just approach it as an industry or as a culture or as materiality. It's all of those things at once.
Well, I think that too may come as a surprise to our listeners. You know, I think Slow Food in the U.S. has a reputation of focusing on very kind of precious small-scale productions, things that have a very limited availability, not the pasta I can go to the grocery store and pick up any day of the week. So was that kind of the ethos of the organization from the beginning, was that you wanted to give this well-rounded perspective? And I'm curious, like, what challenges that brings up for you when you're, like, deciding, you know, either what programming to pursue or even who to partner with? What are some of the sticky points?
Yeah, well, I think again, Ricardo touched on it. There's a great deal of tension in bringing in large-scale industry to something that is so closely associated with Slow Food. And a lot of people call us the Slow Food University. And we are, in fact, not the Slow Food University. We're the University of Gastronomic Sciences, co-founded by Slow Food, absolutely. But it does, I think one of the major sticking points is initial expectations. So certainly many students come thinking that they will only be experiencing small-scale food realities. And then they find out, Lavazza is on the study trip, and we're going to learn about big-scale coffee. And so that's a resistance, right? And then the student is also going to a small scale producer and is also experiencing coffee at the local scale and understanding how Lavazza is important to this particular coffee shop's identity in this particular town and how that history goes back a long way. So then they start understanding that industry is also part of heritage and tradition, as well as these small, local, etc. kind of organizations. The same kind of tension arises with the expectations of companies. You know, what are you going to do for us? Obviously, with corporate relations, there's a money aspect, there's a PR aspect, there's a functionality aspect, there's a knowledge aspect. They like us because we bring a perspective that their perhaps business graduate employees don't have. We've got food culture, we've got knowledge of identity and language and different forms, new forms of communication. And so there's an expectation there, and then there's also a reality that's delivered. So I think managing those expectations is one of the key issues that we face ongoingly. And then the other one is food is changing so quickly, and food needs, and whether it's about systems or security or about identity and culture, those are all coming to the fore simultaneously. And from day to day, one media outlet or another is going to be focusing on one or another issue. And these trends in what is important in food start emerging very, very quickly. And so trying to be responsive to those emerging, well, let's call it student needs or student interests, is also a challenge, because it's something we try to do, but then if you change the program every year,
there's a question. Who are you?
Yeah, who are you, and what's the continuity, and what's the branding?
If I add something, we had also some former students that right now work for some of this big company, for Barilla, Lavazza, and so on, and they can put inside these companies another point of view, the point of view of slow food or the philosophy of sustainability, biodiversity, and so to change also a little bit slowly, obviously, these companies to our point of view.
Yeah, so the Trojan horse, if you will.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's the way we can do any impact, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, who are your students? And has that changed since your inception, like the types of folks that you're attracting?
Yeah, I'd say certainly from my perspective in the master program, when I was a student there, we were a bunch of experimenters. It was the first year the program had been offered. A lot of us were either seeking a change in our professional lives or our personal lives. Fully a third of us had just broken up with a partner. And I think it's like, okay, I'm going off to Italy for a year because I don't know what else
to
do.
What is that book, The Eat, Pray, Love
Eat,
of
Pray, Love, Under the Tuscan Sun?
Yeah,
I mean, there
exactly.
are a lot of fantasies about escaping to Italy for a year. And indeed, the program satisfies those fantasies as well as all the intellectual curiosities. I think we're seeing a much greater diversity in terms of enrollment from different countries. Something like 50 different countries or nationalities are represented, maybe even more than that.
A little bit more. It's 67 right now.
67.
Oh, wow. And the programs are all in English.
The master programs are all in English. The, okay. the undergraduate is in Italian.
In Italian.
But so there's this explosion of diversity in terms of the nationalities. Although we've always had a pretty diverse group. My last program I was directing, there were 18 different nationalities and 26 students. So that's a big change. I think the expectations in terms of both the addressing food and food systems, you know, this is a big buzzword in food studies, is the system or the ecology. And in a very short and compact program, trying to deal with all of those different ecological actors, that's a big challenge. But that's what more and more students are looking for, is the cross-disciplinary knowledge, the cross-experiential learning. So that's what's changing. We've always had a wide range of ages, students as young as 21, 22, fresh out of an undergraduate program, and then people in their late 60s even who are thinking about, what am I going to do with the rest of my life now that I've finished working, and now I want to dedicate my time to doing something good for the world. So one marvelous student from who just graduated, a Norwegian woman, is going back to Norway, having learned about this remarkable program in Italy called Pausa Café, where prisoners are being taught to roast coffee, make bread, and through these programs, we're seeing incredibly low recidivism rates. So they come out of out of their sentence time and discover, oh, I've got a skill that can actually be valuable, that has part of this, I'm part of a community, I'm making something that is good. And so she's taking this program idea and is going to try to install it in Norway, where they have similar problems with recidivism and also need to do something about the very high cost of keeping people in prison. So she's one of these remarkable figures at the age of 68 who is going to go and completely transform, we hope, a social aspect in Norway. And that's part of food as well.
Yeah, well, that was kind of leads into my next question. You know, now that there are a number of graduating, you know, graduated students, cohorts out there in the world, you know, what do you feel like students are doing? How are they taking their time at the university and going kind of out into the world?
Yeah. So far, just to give you also some numbers, so far we had around 1,600 students, and half of them were foreigners, I mean, not Italian, and around 200 students came from the United States so far. So what they do, probably David could explain better than me right now.
Well, again, I mean, they come from diverse backgrounds. They go to diverse places. There are a variety of people doing things in communications, marketing, PR. So fairly logical directions after having done a communications master program. But there are people who are also going into production who fall in love with pig farming or who get really excited about olive oil varietals and go off and actually start making food and making small enterprises. A number of people have gone into different forms of education. So a lot of our graduates are interested in and sometimes find work in food education for kids, for consumers, making change at the retail level. So incorporating a greater experience into the consumption process in a retail spot, but making that more about learning and not just about shopping. A few of us, like me, are continuing to teach or work at the university. I'm just hopefully about to finish my PhD in a very similar brand of food study.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We'll keep our fingers crossed until it actually happens. But so extending that dignity of food study into the doctoral level is also very important because that's, of course, where change can also happen. So there's a little bit then of policy, a little bit of food service, but it runs the gamut pretty widely. People who just take up farming because they think, yeah, I'm a young person and the average age of farmers in North America is 55 and we've got to have some new people farming because otherwise there won't be any small-scale farmers after that. So it's pretty remarkable. Like we call the gastronome a cultural interpreter, not a specialist in any one thing, but someone who can speak multiple languages, put communities together, interpret ideas as well as practices, and make more connections, because that's a problem, you know, when you start fracturing food industries and dividing things up, it makes the corporate powers very strong and the individual much less strong. So bringing those connections back is, I think, what every gastronome is doing in some way or another.
Yeah, and I like just also hard to creating a kind of empathy for how your actions have a cascading effect throughout the world or your community. Is what about the application process? Is it a competitive process? If folks are interested in applying, what's the class size? Like how does it work if I decide tomorrow, I'm like, oh my gosh, everything you've said here is right up my alley. What do I do next?
Well, we're actually just about to close the application process for the next intake. So
I have to wait a year.
No, you can still apply. It's not a super complex application process. We look a lot for motivation. Certainly the application package includes classical things like a cover letter and a university transcript. There is no prerequisite in terms of knowledge, so you can come from a program in English or sound design or biochemistry or absolutely anything, because again, it's a very generalist approach to food. But certainly the motivation is important, strong language skills, and hopefully a desire to make some kind of positive change in the world through food. After that, you know, send in the package and we'd love to see it. It's increasingly competitive. There are, of course, many programs that are offered around the world. Ours is, I think, the only one with this very rare mix of the embodied knowledge and the intellectual knowledge. But people are increasingly learning that's got to be the way to learn about food. So over the years, we've added master programs. We have very strong applications, and they're getting stronger every year. But we also look for diversity. So if you come from an unusual background and want to do something with food, that's a big plus.
Sure.
It's just an online process application. So you should go to our website, that is unisg.it. So UNISG.IT.
Yeah. And yeah, you can get more information. And then two, I think, see how beautiful the space is. I mean, we have a few minutes left here, and I'm wondering if you can maybe paint us a little bit of a picture of the campus experience, because I think that's like ultimately like one of the more unique offerings the school provides.
Well, it's a magnificent location. It's a very unusual spot. The town of Polenzo is an old Roman town, so there are Roman ruins strewn around here and there, and the center of the old village is actually it's all encircles the old amphitheater space. So visually it's magnificent, and there's a piazza and a gorgeous church, and then two large university buildings, which are both old farm buildings from the Royal House of Savoy. So they were effectively agricultural research stations and summer residences for the royal family. And they fell into disrepair. They got renovated. There's now this magnificent hotel, the wine bank underneath the university, a former Michelin-starred restaurant space, which has been converted into our students' dining hall. So that's a pretty special component. And it's
actually the UNESCO heritage, yeah?
Yeah.
It's a heritage site.
Yeah, it is a heritage site.
Wow.
And it's just located, it's about 4.5 kilometers outside of the slightly larger city of Bra, which is the headquarters of Slow Food. So it's in the Langhe, which are right next door to the Langhe, which are the rolling hills of the Piemontese countryside, the northwest region of Italy. So it's a great wine region, very high quality beef and cheese products. It's a pretty dreamy place to spend a year and study food and study it from all ways, including through the mouth.
You're making me hungry for some lunch here. Well,
may I
yes,
just
please.
One thing about the living at the university? We have this new project that is the dining room that started just 2 years ago. And it's carried basically for half of the weeks by our students, former students that had a background in restaurant. And the other 20, 25 weeks, we invite chefs from all over the world to cook for our students. So from chefs that are in a small restaurant, Italian small restaurant, to Michelin star restaurants. Last year we had for 1 week Alice Waters, Ferran Adrià, Alex Atala, so one of the best chefs in the world.
Wow. Wow, that is like taking like school cafeterias to such a next level. I can't even get over it. Yeah. Well, David, Ricardo, Paolo, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a real pleasure to learn more about you guys and the university.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
If folks want to find out more, definitely check out that website, www.unisg.it. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode from the Heritage Radio Network. This program, like all 39 of our weekly shows, is available for free. You can find out more by visiting our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org, and also subscribe and follow our work on iTunes or Stitcher. Thank you so much for listening, and stay tuned in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.